I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Would you like to learn how you can generate more leads without struggling to deliver your services to the clients you already have? What if you were taught how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage tools like podcasts, social media, and video in order to constantly bring in leads, sales, and keep your pipeline full? And what if you knew how to hire the right talent that'll help you scale your business and create greater value without being so hands-on? Join our free Smashing the Plateau community, where listeners and guests of Smashing the Plateau connect, collaborate, and learn how to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life. To join, go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Robbie Kelman-Baxter. Robbie is a consultant and speaker who's been providing strategic business advice to Silicon Valley companies for over 20 years. She's the founder of the consulting firm Peninsula Strategies and regularly presents to and advises companies, professional associations, and leading universities. Robbie is also the author of The Membership Economy, Find Your Super Users, Master the Forever Transaction, and Build Recurring Revenue. Robbie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Robbie, what made you realize that there was a need for your book, The Membership Economy?
Well, I'd been consulting for several years, working with companies like Netflix, like SurveyMonkey, like Oracle. And I was noticing that they all were dealing with the same problems around acquisition and retention, balancing the two, and building what I would call a forever transaction with the people they served. It was a very different model than the transactional model that I'd been kind of growing up with. And I saw that nobody was really creating a playbook for how to build this new kind of business that used subscription pricing, online community, and a membership mindset to build long-term relationships with their customers.
You know, it's really interesting because I noticed the same thing, that there seem to be so many more models that involve membership and recurring revenue that it seems surprising that nobody was creating that playbook.
Yeah, I was surprised too. And by nature, I'm a very cautious, methodical, analytical person. And so I looked around to see, like, surely somebody was writing about this or building out frameworks or coming up with a name for it. And there really wasn't anyone doing it. And so I felt like it was both an obligation and an opportunity to put it down on paper.
Mm. And in your work with these kinds of companies, in addition to observing this trend, how involved had you been in kind of the details of what's involved in creating these kinds of models?
Well, you know, I'm a consultant that happened to write a book. So I was deeply involved in working with companies to build out their business strategies, and particularly the ones that were trying to implement subscription pricing models. So I worked with companies on their acquisition strategies, on managing their retention numbers, on thinking about the right kinds of teams to have for different parts of the business, working with them on their product roadmaps, working on convincing the board, you know, kind of putting together the business case that a membership model made sense and would have a good ROI. So I've been doing that in the trenches for a pretty long time, and I've only been an author for a pretty short time.
Okay. And I know from your background that you also spend a lot of time working with professional services, doing professional services marketing. Is the membership model something that only works with a particular kind of industry, or can it be applied in almost any business?
Those are great questions. So I'm gonna take one and then the other. So first, talking about why professional services marketing and membership models. So two reasons. One of them is that professional services lends itself really well to membership. And you see that with professional associations. You see that with the way that a lot of big consulting firms are moving to build long-term, ongoing, kind of retainer-based relationships with the people they serve. Because the challenge that brings you to the consultant in the first place often doesn't go away. It's you know, I want to make sure that I don't get into legal trouble, so I have a law firm. I want to make sure that I'm thinking strategically about growth, so I have a growth consulting firm looking out for my best interests. And in addition to professional services, though, there's any number, this is answering your second question, any number of industries that can benefit from a membership model. And what I've come to realize is any business that differentiates in part based on their sales and marketing strategies is probably ripe for considering the membership economy, considering becoming a part of that. Because here's the thing. If you think of, so I went to this Vistage conference. I was as a keynote speaker at a Vistage conference. And there were probably about 500 CEOs in the room, all different kinds of businesses. And some of them came up to me afterwards, said, "Hey, Robbie, I run a commercial fishery. I have 20 boats and they all go out. And then at the end of the day, they all go sell whatever they caught for market prices at the dock." So zero sales, zero marketing needs to be done in this business. I couldn't think of a good way that membership mattered, because you don't need to invest in building a long-term relationship with the people you serve, and they don't have other choices. So what I came to realize is if you have a geographic advantage, if your business is based on geography, if your business is based on patent advantages, if your business is based on selling commodities to a single buyer, then you probably aren't going to benefit from having a membership mindset. But if your customers have alternatives, there's probably a way to think about their long-term needs to build strong, loyal relationships with them through the membership economy.
Mm. What's an example of a business that has developed a membership model that most people wouldn't suspect would work for that kind of business?
Well, Peloton. Which is my new favorite thing. Peloton is, you know, they make a stationary bicycle, and you can subscribe to it. So you buy the bike and then you subscribe to live streamed courses that come through their bicycle's tablet. And you can video chat with other people that are taking the same ride at the same time, whether it's a live stream or a recorded class. And you pay on a subscription basis. So I don't think people thought that they could subscribe to physical products like that before. I'm working with an organization that has a subscription to 3D printers, where you subscribe to have access to print whatever it is that you're, you know, whatever part you're trying to build, whatever component you're trying to build. Bain & Company, the big consulting firm, has a membership around their work that they've done with Net Promoter Score, where the leading customer success, customer service, retail person, the person who deals most with customers, they all gather periodically every 6 to 8 weeks to share problems and solutions and benchmark. And they've built this subscription model for that community. So a lot of people would say, well, Bain sells, you know, highly customized, expensive consulting experiences. But, you know, hey, they also have a subscription model. So that's kind of an interesting one as well.
Fascinating. Now, for for a small service business,
yep,
like a consulting business or coaches or attorneys, accountants,
yeah,
what would you suggest if they never thought about having some kind of subscription service or product? Where should they start?
Yeah, so the place that they should start, and this is true of a solo professional services provider, or even if you own like a nail salon or a car wash or some other kind of a small business, you want to start by taking a step back and saying, what are the problems or the opportunities that bring my customers to me in the first place? And how can I make those problems go away for them forever? So for example, if you run a nail salon, I don't go to a nail salon because it's fun to go to a nail salon, although I guess some people enjoy the massage. I go because I want my hands and feet to be, you know, well-groomed and to look professional and put together. If I never had to set foot into another salon again and my nails always looked great, I would take that pill, right? So they could think of a way to make, how would they make sure that my nails always looked good? Well, they could say that it's free in between visits to get your chips fixed, right? They could say that you pay a monthly rate and you can stop in whenever you want to get things fixed up, instead of saying you pay for 10 nails and if you walk out and chip it, then you're out of luck. If you run a small professional services business, let's say that I think you gave the example of being a lawyer, you can either offer a retainer-based experience where you'd say you pay this amount per year or per month, and we will answer any questions you have on, you know, a particular area of interest, a particular specialty. If you run a consulting firm, you can do that. So you'd say, you know, you have a retainer and you get access to my, you know, access to my smarts, as they'd say. So I have many clients who are building membership models, and they can just call whenever they want or send over a document like, hey, this is the pricing structure we're thinking about. What do you think? Or, hey, we have an opportunity to partner with somebody. Can we walk through it with you and prepare for the meeting? That's an opportunity. A bigger opportunity for a solopreneur with subject matter expertise or service expertise is to build their own community. And that can be a live community, say where people, like a mastermind group where you meet every month, and then maybe have access to content. Or it can be virtual, where you have like an online call every week, and then in between there might be homework assignments or videos or a chat area for people to connect and even to ask questions of the subject matter expert. The idea, though, is you start with what's the problem, what's the interest, and then think about how can I layer in value and promise, you know, you pay me a certain fee every month or every year, and I will think of everything I possibly can do to solve that problem for you.
Robbie, do you ever find that professional service providers are afraid to step into this kind of model?
Yeah, absolutely. They worry that they're going to, that the clients are going to call them too much. I mean, I think that's a huge worry that, you know, if I tell you it's $10,000 for 6 months and you have unlimited access to me, maybe that person's going to wake up every morning and call me at 8 o'clock every single day, right? And I'm going to lose money on it. That's a big worry. And there I would say, give it a try with an existing client that you know pretty well. The more senior the person is, the less likely they are to call you all the time, and the more likely they are to call you only when it's really high stakes or important for them. I think with organizing some kind of a group or a virtual experience or virtual community, I think people worry about getting critical mass and getting to scale. And there's a lot. And then the third area that I think people worry about is if they're building something that involves technology, they worry that because they lack the technical expertise, that they can't do it. And what I would say there is that just because, you know, I don't happen to know how to do plumbing, but my house has plumbing, right? I know how to hire a plumber. I would say that, you know, most people that have been successful in business can probably write the requirements they have for technology and then hire somebody to implement that for them. It shouldn't be something that holds you back.
Those are great examples. What are some stories of businesses that where you've helped them smash the plateau?
Oh, there's lots of examples, big and small. One is on the sort of small professional services provider. I have a client that does estate planning for families, and in our work together, she's gone from being kind of an hourly person who pay her for her time, and if it takes her 8 hours, you pay her for 8 hours. If it takes her 4 hours, you pay her for 4 hours, to someone who offers a fixed price for the estate plan, to somebody who has ongoing material of value for somebody. So that if you say, the reason I go see an estate planner is because I want to make sure that my wealth and my family are secure in case something happens to me. Then, you know, having that ongoing, access to information, having access to updates from her when laws change or when your situation changes, and having that be easy to incorporate into the fixed price, I think provides tremendous value for the people she serves. And now she's written several books on estate planning and, you know, is putting out a podcast on kind of life-death law, the issues that people might not be thinking about when they come in for their estate plan, that things that they should be considering that are more, about how they live their lives and the conversations they have than about the legal documents that support their values. So that's one example, the writing the books, the creating the fixed price, to provide a forever promise. I think that's a good one.
That's a great one. And maybe what's one from a bigger company?
From a bigger company, I work with a company called Curbo, which is weight loss for adolescents. So they actually have taken something that was Stanford has a really great pediatric weight loss program. I think it's like $4,500 to do it, though. And for the 6 months that you're involved, you and your child have to be on the Stanford campus for your meeting at 4 o'clock every Tuesday. So there is definitely a plateau that, you know, they can't, you know, there's only so many people that can be served by that model. So I worked with them. I mean, the company, what they've done is develop an app, a mobile app that the kids and their parents can use to talk directly with a live coach and to track their food and to learn how to think about what they eat each day, so that they can reach, you know, many thousands of people. And they're doing, you know, they're doing work with the state governments for, you know, all the kids. They're doing work with large employers, and then they're available to consumers. And so they've been able to really extend the reach of some really good thought leadership and proven methodology for helping obese kids to reach a healthy weight.
Sounds like a great example as well. Now, Robbie, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about your business. And when you were at a plateau, what crossed your mind? How did you react to the roadblocks, and what did you do about it?
Yeah. So when I started my consulting practice, the first year I was just trying to pay my mortgage, my part of the mortgage. Second and third year was kind of like that. And then, you know, that was my first plateau. And then I said, no, I'm actually going to invest in this as a real business. I'm going to, you know, create marketing materials. I'm going to go out and speak a little bit, do a little bit of writing, really try to build a business. That took me another 5 years, 10 years. And I realized I couldn't get much bigger through sort of the word of mouth and, you know, staying in within the small community that I'd been operating in. And, I talked to so many people about how to break through that plateau and how to really be, you know, kind of build a bigger business. And the thing for me that I decided to do was to write that book. I could have, just continue to do my consulting and say, other people will figure it out and somebody will eventually write about it. But I invested, you know, what ended up being like a year's time in writing the book. I'd had notes going back 10 years, but to actually invest the time in a piece of thought leadership that I was really proud of, that I think was, you know, probably among, you know, the best things that I've done. And then to invest another 6 to 12 months in really building awareness about the book. I did a lot of speaking. I wrote a ton of articles. I did a lot of, you know, other stuff to let people know that it existed. And that whole process around the book has really changed, dramatically changed the nature of my business. And probably, I would say it's tripled my revenue for the past few years. And I think, I don't know, you know, with your listeners, whether people are trying to build businesses with lots of employees, or whether you're trying to just build your own business, you know, generating more revenue with less labor intensity. But for me, it was about the latter. And having great thought leadership really allowed me to smash through some roadblocks that had been kind of limiting how productive I could be without hiring people.
I would imagine also writing a book and making the kind of change that you made for the first time, there must have been some aspects of it that seemed a little daunting.
Yeah, all of it. So I'd never written a book before, so that was daunting. Finding an agent, finding a publisher, then figuring out how to write it. You know, in my case, I had a nice outline, as many people do, for my book, and I wrote the first 5 chapters right on schedule as I'd planned. And then when I was halfway done, I realized I had nothing else to say. Like, I'd written myself into a dead end and I had to start over.
Wow.
So that was really stressful. Like, I remember thinking, I have, you know, 4 months until I have to submit it and I have nothing else to say. And do I dump what I did? Do I start over? So in my case, I hired somebody who helped me. He basically told me to set everything aside and to just write what was interesting to me and interview people that were interesting to me that I could learn from. Because he said, if it's boring for you to write, it's boring for people to read. And if it's interesting to you, it'll probably be interesting to other people as well. And so I did that for a few months and then stitched that into a new book structure. So that was all pretty daunting. The other thing that went through my head was, you know, what if I write a book and it's not very good? And then all of my professional peers and my friends who read the book because I wrote it, because they know me, I didn't want those people to read it and say, you know what, this isn't very good. Huh. I would have thought Robbie would have written a better book than this. I was desperately afraid of that, that I would not write something that I could really be proud of.
Yeah, it's really hard. And
it is really hard.
It is really hard. Starting new things is hard at any point. And what has the result been?
Well, the result is the book came out. When I turned it in, I actually thought, this is pretty good. I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, it's gotten very good, you know, reviews and acclaim, which has been it's done so much better than I really ever expected. And it's done, you know, great things financially for my business. And it's also opened up a lot of doors. You know, I've been recording courses. LinkedIn invited me to be one of their subject matter experts, one of their instructors. So I've written a bunch of courses that I've recorded with them. And, you know, I've met a lot of interesting people. I've gotten to speak in a lot of, you know, really cool conferences. And I'm an extrovert, so I love, you know, I love getting out there and meeting people and hearing about people's challenges. So it's been such a fun time these last few years.
Yeah, it's great. And as I mentioned to you before we actually started recording this interview, I picked up a copy of your book some time ago, long before you and I got introduced through this podcast. And I thought it was really a remarkable perspective on something, on a topic that I hadn't quite thought about it in the same way, and really opened up my eyes to what was going on in the economy, and frankly gave me some tips that I could use in my business, which I'm really grateful for. So thank you for writing it.
Oh, you made my day. Thank you for saying that.
And I really mean it. And I wonder if we can actually pull this together, and I could ask you a bonus question. If you could synthesize maybe a small number of tips that you would offer somebody who is in a business like yours and maybe a little behind you in your journey, what would those tips be? And before you answer the question, I'm going to ask you to hold it, because we're going to release the answer inside our Facebook group. And now we'll turn to somebody else. And I wondered if you could mention somebody you know personally who's done a remarkable job of smashing the plateau.
I would say Lisa McLeod, who wrote Selling with Noble Purpose. I think she's been really remarkable. She came back from, professional setback, a business that she'd been involved with that had failed, and consulted for a while, and then wrote a book truly about what she believed in her heart, which was that you can't, that the best salespeople, she's a professional salesperson, what you can't sell, the best salespeople sell when they have a mission, a reason that they're selling it, some higher calling that makes their sale about more than just money. And she speaks all over the world. She's been on, numerous TV shows. She's changed businesses to be more mission driven. And what I love about her is that she's willing to go out there and speak her truth, and then she's willing to be kind of candid and vulnerable and help people kind of get in touch with what is really meaningful about their work. And we all spend so much time on our work that if you can figure out a way to tie it with something noble, and something meaningful, your personal life is better, and hopefully you can also make more money. So I think she's somebody that I would hold up as a great example.
Yeah, Lisa is a great example. She's a recent guest on this podcast where we spent a whole episode talking about finding your noble purpose.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So thank you for that. And Robbie, what's coming up for you in the near future? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, I'm working on a series of courses with LinkedIn Learning, and the next one that's coming out in the first quarter of 2018 is networking. So how to network, which I think is actually a great tool for anybody who wants to take their business to the next level, and can often be the secret sauce to smashing the plateau. It's often not so much what you know, but who you know, making connections, being able to bring disparate groups together. That's really what I'm talking about in that course.
Oh, that sounds great. How can listeners learn more about what you're up to and follow you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Robbie Kelman Baxter. They can find me on Twitter, Robbie Bax. Then they can find me on my website, membershipeconomy.com.
Sounds great. Well, Robbie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Robbie Kelman Baxter, consultant and author of The Membership Economy. Thank you again, Robbie, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. To get Robbie's answer to my bonus question, join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where all the practical tips our guests share on this show will be there waiting for you to sift through and implement in your own business. Our community helps you uncover things like how to generate leads, how to scale your business by hiring the right talent, and how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage new tools like podcasts, social media, and video. Go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join now. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.